I wanted to go to war. It's always, you know, romanticized, and I liked a lot of war movies and stuff, and pretty much all my family had been in the military, like my great-great whoever fought for the Confederates and the Civil War, and then my great-great-grandpa was in World War II, and my great-great-uncle was in World War II. My dad was in the Navy, so it's just kind of a family thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a family tradition. So my great-grandfather was in World War I. My grandfather was a career army officer in World War II. He was actually a tank commander, basically, and then he became an artillery officer later on, and he stayed in for 24 years, I think. Actually, he advised the Shah's government in Iran in the 50s, and he realized early on that supporting bad people to, you know, further U.S. objectives was not a good policy. And even at that point in his career, at that point in the world, even with the Cold War raging, he realized that nothing good would come of this. And so he left. Then Vietnam started ramping up, and they said, well, if you want to make full colonel, you got to go to Vietnam, you know, and advise them and command a battalion or whatever you had to do. And he said, no, I'm not doing that, and basically just cashed in his chips and retired. And so when my uncle joined the Marines, he was very angry, because he didn't want anybody in the family going to Vietnam. But then my dad, who was actually a younger brother, his draft card came up, and it was a pretty low number. And so he ended up joining the Navy. And so he spent the Vietnam years rolling around in the Navy and actually Europe.
So did that all impact you to want to join?
Yeah. You know, I think my dad definitely, you know, encouraged it, but he didn't expect it.
In my family, it's military, medical, police, and firefighter. So everything my family has ever done has been service-connected to helping people. So I think that really motivated me a lot to go out and help people, especially after September 11th.
One day when I was, you know, early freshman year, and I just woke up and I'm like, I like this, but I want to, you know, I want to do more. I want to be an experience where I could be able to, you know, travel the world. I could, you know, say I've done things that people have never done. And you know, I was looking in the military for a while, and it was at that point as a toss up between the Army and the Air Force. And you know, I've always had an interest in aviation. Always had an interest with traveling, you know, we kind of determined that the Air Force would be the best choice.
I knew I didn't want to go in the Navy because I don't want to be on boats. When I was going to sign the papers to join the Army, they weren't in there, and the two officers were right across from each other, and the Marine recruiter was sitting there. He was like, hey, what are you doing? I was like, I'm joining the Army. He's like, you don't want to do that, come in here. So I kind of just wandered in there, and they talked to me, and then next thing you know, I was signing papers to join the Marine Corps.
It's like a stepping stone in life. You guys serve your country because of the great cause and what you stand up for and everything your country's about. And also, it also starts your career. It pays for your school, it gives you tradition, it gives you experience and background. So not many people have it.
The day that we left the United States, it was crazy. It was like we got there, you know, everyone's all anxious because, you know, most of us was our first deployment.
You're never really actually prepared like you think you are. Actually, the night we were leaving, we're sitting there getting ready to load up on a plane and all that stuff, and we're all sitting there like, oh, this is gonna be a cakewalk.
I remember opening the cargo door and literally just feeling like I had a hot air dryer on my face. Like, this is horrible. Like, what the hell is this?
It's 140 degrees and you're really hot, and you're like, oh, this is totally different than what I expected.
I believe I landed at 7 a.m and I ended up work at midnight that night. So they didn't have any time to transition for us. It was like, you're going to work and you're going to be jet lagged and you're going to deal with it.
I remember the tents. We were our first night. We had tents, and the tents would just whap against the frame so hard. You'd think they were just going to rip right off. I mean, it's like, you know, you think you're like, you know, Dorothy, like in Kansas with the tornado coming. I mean, these things are just, it's like a hurricane. That's what it's like. I mean, we're talking sustained winds of like 50 plus miles an hour. You know, it's just blowing like constantly. So, I mean, you can't even go outside without goggles on or, you know, in face masks and all that stuff. I mean, it gets into your ears, it gets in your hair, it gets in every, you know, crevice of your body. There's times that are terrible and there's times that are really fun and just weird. And you just can't help but laugh, like this weird, crazy situation. Like, look where you're at, you know, you're in the middle of Kuwait, in the middle of a desert, and you're digging sandbags to keep your tent from blowing away. And, you know, it's just a bizarre situation you find yourself in sometimes.
We totally lost our minds when we were on our first patrol. Like, this car was probably, you know, 1,000, 2,000 yards away. And we're like, oh, my God, you know, vehicle, IED, we got to stop them. So we're, like, yelling at them, and the guy's just looking at us like, no, it's just a car. They're fine. Don't worry about it. If it was a vehicle IED, they'd be barreling down here after you. They're obviously stopping. So it's really all mental. Like, when you're over there, it's like you're terrified, but you kind of have to put that in the back of your mind and be like, okay, I can't show that I'm scared, but I really am absolutely scared out of my mind.
Because the Marine Corps is a lot of routine, and it has to be, because sometimes you don't know what's wrong unless you have a routine. You don't know where things are going and how things can screw up unless you have something set onto what it should be doing.
What was the moment that things changed for you?
It was probably when my squad leader and radio operator died, because that was our first casualty, and that was the first time I'd seen anybody actually get killed right in front of me. So it was like, oh my God, like, this is actually happening. Like, this isn't training, this isn't a video game, this isn't anything. Like, I just died. I just about died right there. And then, like, also, like, once you see that happen, it's pretty much like, well, I'm either going to die or I'm not. So you don't become reckless, but you almost become somewhat fearless. Like, it's like, well, if it's my time to go, like, it's my time to go.
You go through training, through military history and strategy, and you learn about every single weapon we have in our arsenal. You learn how fast they shoot around. You learn how many rounds they can shoot at once. You learn how to break them down, clean them, put them back together. Even the tiniest things matter. There's a reason they do it. And it might be annoying and it might be frustrating, but you just don't understand yet why you're doing it. And they're not going to explain it in very nice, you know, fluffy unicorn ways. You know, you're just going to have to suck it up and do it. My recruiters prepared me pretty well for the physical. I don't think I was prepared somewhat for the mental, but I don't really know if anyone really is.
I almost killed this kid one day. He was just such a dirtbag. He was, he was just one of those guys that, like, he wanted to, it's like he joined the Marines and then he was going to be too cool for school, you know? Like, in boot camp in the Marine Corps, it's very peer pressure orientated. Because the idea is to start thinking about we instead of me. You know, we all fail or we all succeed. There is no I did, like, I did okay. No, he failed, so you failed him, and, you know, that's the idea. Anyway, and this kid was just on my last nerve. I had been trying and trying and trying. He's back there, like, just folding his clothes all slow. We're already, like, standing, like, we're at attention, ready to go to lunch or dinner or whatever it was. I remember a drill instructor looks at me, and he's like, I was the guide, they call it. The guide is, like, the head recruit. And I go back there, and I couldn't believe it. I grabbed this kid, I had him by the collar, and I was just ready to pound his face. I mean, I was just going to kill him. And then all of a sudden, I felt this, like, on my collar from the drill instructor grabbing me. He realized I was going to kill him. It was just my temper just snapped.
I remember one of my sergeants getting promoted, and we was about 4 months from going home, and we wrapped him up in saran wrap and spray painted the sergeant rank on his chest just to mess with him. There's a lot of great times over there. You just don't hear about them. What you guys see on TV nowadays is that all the bad things that we do. But in real life, we do a lot of great things. Soldiers die every day for Afghan people. And really, we give them food, generators, drop off water to them, provide schools for them, build schools for them, build district centers for them, but you guys never see that.
The people didn't hate us as much as the media made it seem like they do. Like, a lot of the houses we went into, they'd feed you and give you water and they'd let you come in. Like, towards the end of my first deployment, they started coming to us and letting us know where the, like, insurgents or bombs and stuff were. So they really wanted to help, but the thing is, like, their hands are kind of tied, because when we were over there, we had a makeshift police force set up, but the insurgents captured them all and beheaded them in the streets. So a lot of people are terrified for their families and their lives, so they don't want to help us. It's kind of a catch-22 for them.
You know, I used to watch the news all the time, and now I won't even turn it on. You know, you've got one side that doesn't support the military, doesn't support the mission in Afghanistan or in Iraq, for that matter. And so they're going to obviously try to find, you know, statistics, you know, stories and stuff like that, that, you know, really, really kind of test the character of our servicemen out there. And I honestly think that, you know, if you haven't put, you know, if you haven't leased boots on before, then don't say a word.
From what I've seen in the media, they only show the bad things, like people dying and, you know, oh, suicide bomb goes off here, but they don't show, like, the good things that happen. Like, when we, on my second deployment, the place that we went to had no running water, no electricity, nothing, but by the time we left, pretty much every home had at least a generator or at least running water within there, and none of the media ever covered that.
The longer you go, the bigger you grow numb, because you're away from everybody you know, and you start losing feeling of everything. You kind of just go through life, through day by day, everything runs the same. And you just learn to adjust. You have no feelings. You just get by each day until you go home. All that pressure, all that stress that you had building up to that moment, all that worry is gone the second that you get home to the United States. I mean, there's no better feeling.
We landed in Columbus, and as soon as I stepped foot to get down there, my sister, like, started sprinting at me. Not only is it your first hug from a girl, but, you know, it's your first hug, you know, from, you know, your little sister. And then my dad just, we're proud of you. And, like, you know, for him to say, like, you know, we're proud of you for what you did, it was, like, definitely something that, you know, I'll never forget.
You start your life again. Everything was on pause while you're over there. I mean, you can't advance in education, job, relationships, friendships. Everything you do over there is just on pause from your last when you left. But basically, you start a new beginning.
When you're coming out of the military, you're really self-conscious, and you want to go to school, and you want to do these things. I mean, I didn't even know how to register for classes, you know.
I think the transition from basic training to second semester sophomore year was the hardest compared to anything. That was just, I couldn't stand it. And just kind of like a lost individual, I felt. You know, just really couldn't connect with anyone because, you know, before I went to basic, I was like all those kids. I was, a kid at Miami. And then I, you know, went through that and, you know, I really kind of grew up there. But, you know, I came back to the situation where you're seeing 40 of the best friends when you left and now they're getting cliquey. And, you know, you're seeing that people really are showing their true colors and you don't like those true colors. And so that was a big issue.
You know, I feel like I'm kind of late in life getting things going, you know. It's like, you know, it's kind of humbling when you're, you know, 30 walking around college, you know. And I guess I get frustrated sometimes with people's it's not their attitude, it's just, like I said, it's just a different mindset. Like, I have a different expectation about people and how they should behave and, like, their level of commitment to things and it's just all those things, and you just don't get that with people. I have to really bite my tongue and not just take charge and dominate people and just tell them, like, oh, you're going to do this, 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 and this is how we're going to get it done, and then we'll be done. It's hard not to be like my really uber alpha self sometimes. I think it is a little bit of a challenge sometimes to connect with people, and, you know, you don't have, like I said, that shared experience, so you don't have that shared background, and it's like you're just on two different trajectories in life, you know? It's like I spent the last 5-6 years of my life doing this, you know, what have you been doing for the last 5 or 6 years?
It's really difficult to connect with someone that, you know, hasn't been there, doesn't really know what it's like, and I don't really like to go out there and, you know, hey, you want to hear a story? You know, I'm not that kind of guy. I like to be reserved about it, but, you know, if you ask me in a proper way, you know, you're not like, hey, who'd you kill over there? That's something that, you know, I have no problem telling people my story.
I don't know what it is. Like, I have to prepare myself to talk about it. Like, I had to prepare myself to talk about what I've talked to you about. But, like, if somebody just walks up to me and, like, hey, what was Iraq like? I mean, I'll be like, it's fine. And they'll be like, well, what do you mean? It's just touchy subjects sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think over the years it's just been common knowledge that we don't want to talk about it because it's hard. When we have to tell the story over and over, we have to live it in our minds. And it's just hard.
You know, I don't come off like that, you know. I think they're afraid of not being able to fit in and not being able to, you know, be perceived as, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stigma attached to being, you know, a veteran sometimes. And, like, people think, you know, veterans are all crazy, you know, they've been brainwashed. I mean, people said that to me when I joined the Marines, especially when I joined the Marines. Like, oh, don't let them brainwash you. You'll come back crazy, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I really resented that. And I resented it even more after I was in, because I was like, you know, I get brainwashed, man. What are you talking about, you know?
Military veterans are some amazing people. We've been through hell. Be a little more open-minded, because we're not all trained killers that are brainwashed. We're still human. We're still people. And, yeah, we still have consciences. That's why we get PTSD. Because how do you rationalize the things you have to do to protect your country? I think a lot of people just associate PTSD as we're crazy. And that's not it. I mean, our minds have changed a lot. The way we think, the way we do things has changed drastically. And a lot of people don't understand that. They just don't understand that we have to do things differently now for our own sanity, if that's even a thing.
It was very hard. Like, when I first got back, everything terrified me. Like, I'd be walking down the street and constantly looking over my back because you don't want to make sure somebody's not going to come around a corner and shoot you. Motorcycles would scare the crap out of me. Fireworks, I still don't deal with those. Driving on the street or driving my car just anywhere and I'd see potholes, I'd start slowing down or try to avoid them just to make sure there's no IEDs or anything in them. But, I mean, over time, it's gotten a little bit better. 2 years ago, I went to a self-help group. It's like a whole group for people with PTSD. It was substance abuse linked with PTSD. Like, I used to drink a lot, very heavily, because that's also another thing from the military is you hide your pain with drinking. So we'd all just sit around, tell our stories, you know, how drinking and alcohol is linked to our post-traumatic stress and what we can do to help deal with PTSD without drinking and all that stuff. I'm a lot better now, but it's taken, I've been out for 4 years. It's taken 4 years, and I'm still not completely recovered.
I'm a civilian now, and I see a lot of how the vets are treated when they come home from Iraq. They're not getting the medical care. They're getting screwed out of their benefits just because the government doesn't have any money, which is not their fault. They went. They fought. They sacrificed. Some of them gave their lives. I just wish the vets got better care. And it's not always money, you know. Sometimes it's just someone to talk to that's not going to judge us because they really don't understand us. Or at least open-minded enough to listen, because we have a huge wealth of information and knowledge. And we have been places. We have seen things. And that can help a lot of America. But it doesn't. It gets completely overlooked or undervalued. It's not easy to be military, and it's not easy to be a veteran. But at the end of the day, I think we'd all do it over again.
I think from the start when you deploy, your goal is to make it home. And as long as that happens, you don't want to take anything back.
I really wouldn't trade any of the experiences. I'd do the whole thing over again if I could. Like, I mean, it taught me a lot of things, and I also met a lot of nice people, you know, over there, and I met a lot of good guys in the military, so really, I'd do it all over again. I know it's hard to understand. After all these terrible stories I've told you, you're probably sitting there like, why would you ever want to do this? It sounds horrible.
You know, you look back on anything with rose-colored glasses. I mean, there's a reason I left, but, you know, and it's hard. It's not, you know, obviously it's not fun a lot of the time, but... yeah, there's definitely things you miss. You know, just doing things, being a part of a big organization that's actually, like I said, actually doing something tangible in the world, and, you know, you feel like you're a part of something real and something, you know, that's making a difference in the world.
I think what keeps me motivated is the fact that you're there for something more than yourself. And I can honestly say that if they called us again, go tomorrow, I'd go.
There's something that you go through with your friends that no one else can go through. It's like a bond. Like, you don't go out drinking or partying. But you stand next to each other and you fight for a cause. The best times are with your friends, your bad boys, as you call them, military.
Knowing what you know now, would you do everything all over again?
Yes.
Why?
I believe there's more positives than negatives. Everything I wanted to do, I done. I wanted to serve my country and I done it. My grandpa did it, my uncle did it. Long lines of my family did it. So... I think it's something I'm proud of, and I hope my family's proud of it in the long run.